وهو خير موفق ومعين. ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين. اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد. Loud salawat please. اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد. لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين روحي وأرواح العالمين لتراب مقدمه الفداء واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين. السلام عليكم brothers and sisters. الحمد لله رب العالمين. We've been talking about the topic of لغة الله and explained how that is achievable. لغة الله means to see God. How that is achievable. And the way to achieving that, as I explained in the last session, is muraqabah. I'm sorry, this is off. So we've been talking about لغة الله, how it's achievable, and that the way to that is مراقبة. To remind ourselves every morning when we wake up that we should not commit sins on this particular day. During that day, we should be careful to observe taqwa. And at night before going to bed, we must review our day to see whether we've been true to our pledge in the morning or not. That's muraqabah. Today, inshallah, I'm going to talk about the main obstacle, the main roadblock to لغة الله. The first and foremost obstacle that we face in our path toward لغة الله is sin, ma'asiyah. To violate God's commands, to violate God's instructions. That is our main obstacle, our main roadblock in the way to لغة الله. For us beginners, it's our main challenge. For those who have traversed the path, for those who have advanced, there are other challenges ahead of them, like going beyond the Alam al-Akut, as the example I gave you from Alam al-Tabatabai. Those are for the later stages. For us, the main challenge and the main obstacle is to avoid sin, to refrain from sin. What is sin? Sin, one of the words for it in Arabic is ma'asiyah. Ma'asiyah means rebellion against God. To rebel against God. Unfortunately, we don't usually see it in that light. Usually we take it very lightly. There's a lot of things we know they're sins, but unfortunately, I'm speaking for myself, we commit them regardless. Although we know that they're sins, we take them lightly, we don't make a big deal out of them. We commit the sins. So the first issue is to realize and comprehend the gravity and the severity involved in committing a sin. We must bring that home to ourselves. Yes, God is Rahim and Rahman, but it's a big deal. Committing a sin is really bad. There's a very beautiful, but at the same time telling an alarming passage in As-Sahifa As-Sajjadiyyah, the scripture of Imam Sajjad, which is a wonderful book of supplications from our fourth Imam. Supplication number 16, دعاؤه إذا استقال من ذنوبه أو تذرع في طلب العفو عن عيوبه. His prayer when he sought God to forgive him and to forgive his sins. Passage 30 of this supplication, brothers and sisters. Ya Elahi, O my God, لو بكيت إليك حتى تسقط أشفار عيني. Should I cry to you until the eyelids of my eyes fall off? وانتحبت حتى ينقطع صوتي. Should I cry and wail until my voice becomes mute? وقمت لك حتى تتنشر قدماي. And should I stand up and worship before you until my feet swell up? وركعت لك حتى ينخلع صلبي. I go down in ركوع before you and worship until my back falls apart. وسجدت لك حتى تتفقى حدقتاي. Should I do so much sajda? Should I go down in prostration and stay in that position so long until my eyeballs fall out? وأكلت تراب الأرض طول عمري. And instead of food to punish myself, I eat dirt for the rest of my life. وشربت ماء الرماد آخر دهري. And instead of nice drinking water, I drink water that is polluted with ashes. وذكرتك في خلال ذلك حتى يكل لساني. And I, in doing these things, I mention your name. I plead to you so much until my tongue stops moving. ثم لم أرفع طرفي إلى آفاق السماء استحياء منك. And I don't, in shame and in humiliation, I don't raise my head to the skies. ما استوجبت بذلك محو سيئة واحدة من سيئاتي. If I do all this, that would still not be enough. It would not be cause for you to forgive one of my sins. If I do all these things, if I spend so many years in prayer and prostration until my back falls apart, until my eyeballs fall out, until my feet swell up, all these things, they won't be enough. They would not be cause for me to merit God's forgiveness for one sin. Now, is Imam Sajjad exaggerating here? Is it just a figure of speech? Is it just being rhetorical? It's not. And there's good reason for it. Imagine you have a good friend, and the good friend gives you a car as a gift. It would be an extremely, extremely generous friend to do such a thing. And then you turn back and slap him in the face. Now imagine a king or a president, someone in a place of authority. You're destitute, you don't have anything. You go to him. He gives you everything. He brings you to a position of power. And then you go behind his back and stab him in the back. Now compare that with our relation to God. I've said this before. The Urafa and the philosophers say our existence, the existence of all creatures in relation to God, is rabt mahda, ayn al rabt, ayn al faqr. We have nothing, not even our own existence. We tend to think of ourselves as beings who receive blessings or bounties from God. That's a wrong perception. Our very existence, our very remaining in existence is coming from God. Not just our initial existence. Every second of remaining in this in existence is from God. And then he's given us commands and instructions for our own improvement, for our own spiritual progress, and we go against them. In certain supplications, we have this phrase, إِلَهِ تَتَوَدَّدُ إِلَيَّ وَأَنَا أَتَبَغَّضُ إِلَيْكَ. What supplication is it? I think it's iftitah, right? God, you show love to me, I show anger to you, I show rebellion to you. When we consider the relation between creatures, between human beings, and between God, we realize why Imam Sajjad is saying this and why he's not exaggerating. We really cannot merit being forgiven by God. God forgives us, that's another issue. But that's due to his fadl, that's due to his grace, that's due to his ihsan, that's due to his generosity. It's not due to something we merit on our part. There is nothing that we can earn, that we can merit, that would merit God's forgiveness. That's the gravity, the severity of sin. But furthermore, God despises sin not just because it's a violation of his commandments, but because it's a violation of our own nature. We're destroying our own nature. We're disfiguring our spiritual existence. We're disfiguring. It's wrong to perceive of actions as this is usually what happens in the West, in the Western mentality. Like you do something, it's behind your back, it's gone, it's over. That's a Western mentality. In the Islamic mentality, however, everything sticks with you. Whatever you do goes into your being, goes into your character, shapes your character, literally shapes your character. In the sense that through our actions, we might go so far as to turn into brutes, into animals. God forbid. Nastajiru billah. This is a matter of fact, according to the Shia faith. So we're violating our own existence. There's a well-known dawaya, you might have heard it before. Imam Baqir is with his companion Abu Basir. Abu Basir is blind. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Imam Baqir is with his companion, with his blind companion Abu Basir. I don't know which precise location they're standing at, because the rawaya doesn't mention it. But they're somewhere in or around Mecca, observing the Hujjaj, the pilgrims, doing their pilgrimage rituals. Abu Basir is blind, but he can hear, and so he says, مَا أَكْثَرَ الْحَجِيجُ وَأَعْظَمَ الْذَجِيجُ. There's so many pilgrims, and the sound of their crying in worship to God is so loud. Imam Baqir turns back and says, فَقَالَ بَلْ مَا أَكْثَرَ الْذَجِيجُ وَأَقَلَّ الْحَجِيجُ. Yes, there's a lot of noise, but there's not that many pilgrims. There's not that many true pilgrims. And then Imam Baqir continues, أَتُحِبُّ أَن تَعْلَمَ صِدْقَ مَا أَقُولُهُ وَتَرَاهُ عَيَانًا. O Abu Basir, would you like to behold for yourself what I'm telling you? And Abu Basir says, yes. So Imam Baqir pulls his hand, wipes his hand over Abu Basir's face. فَمَسَحَ عَلَى عَيْنَيْهِ وَدَعَى بَدَعَوَاتٍ فَعَوْدَ بَصِيرًا. Abu Basir gains his sight, his vision. فَقَالَ انظُرْ. Imam Baqir tells him, look at the group. يَا أَبَا بَصِيرٍ إِلَى الْحَجِيجِ. قَالَ فَنَذَرْتُ فَإِذَا أَكْثَرُ النَّاسِ قِرَدَةٌ وَخَنَازِيرٌ. I looked at the crowd. They were all either monkeys or pigs. فَإِذَا أَكْثَرُ النَّاسِ قِرَدَةٌ وَخَنَازِيرٌ وَالْمُؤْمِنُ بَيْنَهُمْ كَالْكَوْكَبِ اللَّامِعِ فِي الظُّلَمَاءِ. And the true Shias that were in that crowd, they shone like bright skies in the dark sky of the night. That's how rare they were. وَالْمُؤْمِنُ بَيْنَهُمْ كَالْكَوْكَبِ اللَّامِعِ فِي الظُّلَمَاءِ. فَقَالَ أَبُو بَصِيرٍ صَدَقْتَ يَا مَوْلَايِ. Abu Basir says, yes, I now acknowledge the truth of what you told me. مَا أَقَلَّ الْحَجِيجُ وَأَكْثَرَ الْذَجِيجُ. There are so many few true pilgrims and a lot of noise. ثُمَّ دَعَ بَدَعَوَاتٍ. And then Imam again said some prayers and he became blind again. So it might have passed his mind, why didn't the Imam just keep me with my eyesight? The Imam Baqir tells him, مَا بَخِلْنَا عَلَيْكَ يَا أَبَا بَصِيرٍ. We're not stingy. It is not a problem for us to make you see, to give you your eyesight. وَخَشِينَا فِتْنَةَ النَّاسِ بِنَا. But we fear that people would not comprehend what we're doing. So in other words, he tells them that it's, although I would like to return your eyesight, but it's better that you remain blind the way you were so that people don't realize that something has gone on. But anyway, the point is that we believe that sins literally disfigure our spirit. It's not just a figure of speech. It's not just a metaphorical thing. It is in the same vein that the urafa, the true urafa of the Shia faith, explain that all the verses that you have in the Quran about the punishments of hellfire, it would be wrong to perceive these verses as meaning that God has this place, this oven or this dungeon, where he kindles some fire in it and he blows into the fire. And then when the fire is lit and it's burning hot, he throws people into it. That's a wrong conception of what of how hellfire works. The punishments that we suffer in hell are actually the disfigurations of our own character. They're the violations of our own character. They are our failure to actualize our potentials, to reach the heights of spiritual perfection. That's what they are. There's a necessary relation between them and our actions. And that's the true understanding of the punishments of hellfire. But because most people, it's difficult for a lot of people to understand that, especially back when the Quran was revealed, the imagery that the Quran provides is such that makes us think that hellfire is something out there, that God makes a fire in it. That is not the case. The punishments of hellfire are our own actions. And you've all heard the story of the Ashab al-Sabt, the people of the Sabbath. The Jews who were tested by God, God had told them that they cannot fish on Sabbath, on Saturday. But then somehow it occurred that on Saturdays there were more fish around. So they couldn't stand that. So they used some tricks to actually fish on Sabbath. And God turned a part of these people again into monkeys. That story that you read is not an anomaly. It's an anomaly in a sense. It's an exception in the sense that usually our characters are not shown in this world. But in that case, their characters were manifested in this world as well. Even before God turned them into monkeys, they were monkeys. But it was not manifest in this world. And alam al-mithal is manifest. Those who have the basira, the spiritual eyesight, the two eyes that I mentioned, Imam Sadiq says our Shias have four eyes, two eyes in their head and two eyes in their hearts. Those who have those two eyes in their hearts open, they can see the true character of people. All these examples go hand in hand to show how sin disfigures our spirit. That's how we should view sin. Not as some passing moment, as something that goes by and you put it behind you, as the Western mentality tells you. Okay, that's a major distinction between the Western mentality and the Islamic mentality. That is not the case. We are, by sinning, na'udhu billah, nastajiru billah, we are disfiguring our spirits and our souls. We are disfiguring the means whereby we can attain to liqa Allah. We are disfiguring the eyes of our hearts whereby we can view and behold the beauty of God. That's how we should view sins. Another effect, another primary effect of sin is that it shifts and alters our mentality. Thinking, or the direction of our thinking, is in line with our character and with our intentions and with our psychological states. So when we sin, we are actually, if we persist in doing sins, if we persist in doing certain sins, we are actually shifting and altering our mentality. Verse 25, Surah Fussilat. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم وقيضنا لهم قرناء فزينوا لهم ما بين أيديهم وما خلفهم. The disbelievers, the sinners, God says, we assign to them companions, evil companions from jinn and from human beings, that embellish for them ما بين أيديهم وما خلفهم. And as the Quranic exegetes explain, this means the beauties and the wonders of the world, the sins, these shayateen that God appoints to accompany the sinners, embellish for the sinners the sins of this world and the rebellion against God. And I think that is very evident today in the West. My mother is a convert. May God bless her and extend her life for another 100 years, inshallah ta'ala. She's about 50, 60 years old. When she was a child, she says how different America was back then. In the sense that people weren't allowed, they at least weren't allowed to use
to curse, to say bad words, to use filthy language. My aunt, when she got engaged, she was not allowed to go out alone. She was engaged, but she was not allowed to go out alone with her fiancé. The parents had to be there. When they ate, they had to clean their plates and their bowls. Clean. Or else my grandfather would spank them and say that you're wasting God's blessings. Compare that to what America is today. If you follow the news, you follow the media, the one topic is homosexuality. Allahu Akbar. The amount that they're propagating this and they're instilling this grave sin that is against everything that is sacred, that they're instilling this in the minds and hearts of the people as something that is normal and as something that even God likes. Priests and pastors and preachers are coming out and saying that they're gay and that homosexuality is not bad. Qurana asaw, these are the Qurana, the shayateen that through sin surround people and change their mentality. Or all the killing going on in Palestine today. A lot of people see them, okay. But they've worked on their brains so hard, they've brainwashed them so much that they can't think right. That's another effect of sin. God in the Quran describes Pharaoh in his relation to his people as istasghara an-nas fa-ata'u. He belittled his people through sin. That's the same thing that the people in power in the West are doing. By making sin pervasive, they are changing the mentality of the people to their benefit and advantage. So another effect, another primary effect of sin is that it changes one's mentality. Another effect is that it makes life miserable. That's attested to by the Quran, and it's attested to by real life experience. Verse 124, Surah Taha. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. وَمَنْ أَعْرَضَ عَنْ ذِكْرِي فَإِنَّ لَهُ مَعِيشَةً ذَنْكَ. Those who refrain from my remembrance, those who avoid my remembrance, to avoid God's remembrance is to sin. Those who neglect my remembrance, إِنَّ لَهُ مَعِيشَةً ذَنْكَ. For him, is a miserable and wretched life. With all the enjoyments in the West, with all the pleasures you see in America, but look at the level of depression. Look at all the psychological problems. It's incredible, it's amazing. Almost a good portion of the population is taking antidepressant medicine. They're drinking, they're enjoying themselves, they're doing all the different pleasures that the Muslims or the mu'mineen, the virtuous mu'mineen don't do, but yet they're more miserable. Statistics back this up too. It's the nature of sin. Sin is a violation of our nature. It makes us feel miserable. We don't know what is wrong with us, but it's actually the sins that have disfigured our character. makes us feel miserable. We've been alienated from ourselves. That's what sin does. Therefore, it makes life miserable. It makes life wretched. But when you look at the lives of the pure servants of God, one prime example, whom alhamdulillah I had the blessing of meeting, Ayatullah Khushbakht, who was a student of Allama Tabatabai. Although he was not that rich, he was not rich at all actually. But just the peace and happiness one could feel, the peace and happiness that he exuded, the peace and happiness that he had, although he had sicknesses and diseases, he had diabetes. But mashallah, he would go to sleep 12 o'clock at night, be awake 2 hours before morning prayer. And then after 2 hours after Fajr, he would have 3 consecutive speeches for different groups of students. And he would always be smiling and laughing. And all the questions that people addressed to him, no matter how rude or how blunt they were, he would always smile and actually he would start laughing really hard if they were rude. He would never get upset. That's the result of not sinning. That's the result of taqwa. That's the result of your soul remaining pure. Another effect, primary effect of sin, which is, one could say, the more dangerous aspect of it, is that it can gradually take away one's faith. It can gradually deprive one of one's faith. We are mu'mineen inshallah ta'ala. We are believers inshallah ta'ala. But sinning and persisting on sinning, nastajiru billah and na'udhu billah, can take away our sin. Verse 10, Surah Rum, a'udhu billah minash shaitanir rajim. Thumma kana 'aqibata alladhina asa'u as-su'a an kadhabu bi ayatillah wa kanu biha yastahzi'un. The conclusion and consequence of those who did evil was that they repudiated the signs of God. كَذَّبُوا. So doing evil, su'a, leads to sinning. Su'is ma'asiya, sinning. Sinning leads to repudiating one's faith. I'm sure most of you have heard of, or at least the elder generation have heard of, Ayatollah Burujerdi, the well-known late Ayatollah who was the great marja before Imam Khomeini. Ayatollah Burujerdi, one day he was told that his old friend and classmate is passing away. He's in the state of ihtidar. So Burujerdi goes to see his friend to say farewell. At the last moments, the friend turns back and says, I don't remember exactly the words. I hate God, or I don't want to go to God. I don't want to see God. Ayatollah Burujerdi was surprised. You've been in the Hawza for so many years. You've studied all your life. Why are you giving up your faith at the last moments of your life? That the moments of death, brothers and sisters, are extremely difficult moments. Those whose iman is mura'a, in the language of the rawayat, whose faith is not established and is not deep rooted, those last moments are so difficult that na'udhu billah, we might lose our faith. So Ayatollah Burujerdi says, why are you giving up your faith in the last moments? He said, I was your classmate. We were always together. We had discussions together. You ended up becoming such a great and famous marja, and I'm a nobody. The sin of hasad. He harbored hasad and jealousy all these years, and that jealousy, hasad is a sin, jealousy is a sin. That persistence in that sin finally took away his faith. ثُمَّ كَانَ عَاقِبَةَ الَّذِينَ أَسَاءُوا السُّوءَ أَنْ كَذَّبُوا بِآيَاتِ اللَّهِ. Or the example of Zubayr, the companion of the Prophet and the companion of Imam, the initial companion of Imam Ali. Initially he stood up for Imam Ali after the death of the Prophet. But what happened? He was given wealth by the people in power. He took that wealth and gradually, through sin, he became the enemy of Imam Ali. That's if we, God forbid, if we persist in sin, that's the effect it can have. And this same phenomenon has repeated itself in the Islamic Republic of Iran. When you look at a 30-year history of the Islamic Republic, you had people at the beginning of the revolution who were very pro-revolution, very pro-Islam, but through sin, now they're totally opposed to the Islamic Republic. The same people, they were main figures in the revolution. I'm not going to mention names. But through sin, through not observing taqwa, their fate after 30 years turned 180 degrees. Now they're enemies of Islam, they're enemies of Islam. That's the effect of sin. And I want to mention a very important point in relation to this effect that sin can have on us. And that is, we have heard a lot and we have read a lot in the riwayat of the Ahlul Bayt that those who cherish the love of the Ahlul Bayt, they will not go to hellfire. Those who cherish the love of the Ahlul Bayt will not go to hellfire, no matter how much sin they might have. We've all heard that, right? And there's a riwayat, it's true. But brothers and sisters, on the other hand, we have riwayat. Many riwayat. In Kitabul Iman al-Kufr of Kafi, there's many, many riwayat that say just to love the Ahlul Bayt is not enough. You have to observe taqwa. So when you put these two seemingly contradictory classes of riwayat together, the conclusion is yes, you will be spared the punishments of hellfire if you cherish the love of the Ahlul Bayt. But the point is, the catch is that if we be able to maintain and retain the love of the Ahlul Bayt until our death, we'll be spared the punishment of hellfire. If, God forbid, we are sinners, we might lose that love prior to our death. Sin has that capacity. Sin is very effective in taking away your faith, in taking away your love for the friends of God, for the awliya of Allah. And one last point before I finish up, it's almost azan time, is that when we talk about sins, we have a great variety of spectrum of sins. When we say refraining from sins, we mean all sins. One primary sin that a lot of us neglect is su'ul khulq. Su'ul khulq. To be mean, especially toward one's family members. It's a very grave sin. It's a sin that Ayatollah Khushvakht a lot of times warned against. One of the main steps that we can take towards spiritual perfection is to be always nice to our kids and our wives and our families, and to control our temper and never lose our temper. رواية في الإمام صادق إن سوء الخلق لا يفسد العمل كما يفسد الخلة كما يفسد الخل العسل كما يفسد الخل العسل. سوء الخلق, bad أخلاق, bad temper, being mean, destroys virtuous actions just as vinegar destroys honey when you pour vinegar over honey. It dissolves. You've all seen how when you put vinegar over honey, the honey dissolves. That's how bad of an effect سوء الخلق has on our faith. Ayatollah Hasanzadeh Amuli, who's still alive, Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen, one of the great students of Allama Tabatabai, he has said that when he was young, when he had just the first years of his marriage, once he lost his temper and showed some measure of bad temper to his wife. That night, in his dream, he saw a vision that in that vision, he was told that he had lost 20 years of worship because of losing the temper for one moment. He had lost the ajr and all the spiritual progress that he had gained over 20 years, or that was the equivalent of 20 years of work, he lost in that one moment of losing his temper and speaking to his wife. We ask God, by the right of the Ahlul Bayt, by the right of the 14 infallibles, that he may help us, that he may grant us the tawfiq, the ability to observe taqwa at all times and to refrain from sin. وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين.